Yes. We are live on Michael Angley Live, and action-packed show tonight, as always. You know, I hate to say that. I would like to keep it moving. There's a lot of news. There's so much news. It's very difficult to condense it all into a one-hour show once a week. But I will tell you this: there is nothing forgiving out there in the world of politics, and the division, the anger, the stupidity, the ignorance, you know, where is it going to end? When are people ever going to get together and say, hey man, you know, this isn't what we want for our country? Because basically we're all just letting these people push us around, you know, and kind of use people to fight each other so these guys can play their game. And I think they're all guilty of it, every last one of them. And it's become this ridiculous circus. It's gone from representation to ridiculous circus. And the circus gets more ridiculous every day. And the hypocrisy, it grows, it expands. It's unbelievable. When I look at the comments that this Ilhan Omar made, she is a young woman from Somalia that came to the U.S. and now she's a representative. You would think that's a dream to be in Somalia, a horrible, horrible situation, a terrible place to be, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. They're suffering. By the way, they're suffering. Why? Because of the powers that be in Somalia, right? Not because of the United States. Not because of Jewish people, not because of any one type of person necessarily. If you want to say Islam, you can. But I'm not here to condemn Islam. I am here to condemn ignorance. And it really comes down to, all right, I'll get you up to speed. If you don't know the story, if you haven't seen the ridiculous resolution that Congress drew together, a non-binding resolution, you know what that means? It means nothing. It means they sat around, pat themselves on the back, a resolution against hate and whatever, but they didn't name this woman by name. But that's, you know, and you know, not just her, but a lot of these young ones, you know, Cortez, and there's another one from Palestine that is in Congress now. They need to stop attacking their constituents. They need to stop attacking Americans. And all these people have a story. Maybe not Cortez. Her story is one of, you know, she was, you know, grew up not wealthy, but fairly wealthy, right? Went to an Ivy League college and worked as a bartender. And now she's in Congress telling everybody what to do and thinking how she's going to fix the world, you know, which is, hey, it's great if you have ideas. I love ideas. As long as the ideas work for people, I love that, right? But I hear a lot of just this anti-white, anti-this, anti-that. These people are just so racist in their speech. And, you know, how could you sit there and condemn racism, but at the same time, you're doing it. You know, you're doing it. So Omar, she comes out. You know, I look at people like this. Whenever you're dealing with someone, it doesn't matter who you're dealing with. Whenever you're dealing with someone, they can't mask what they truly are for any length of time. It's going to show. It's going to come out. You might have little glimmers or glimpses of what they truly are. It's going to come out. People's personalities truly come out. So it includes Bernie Sanders talking about socialism. And if you think that he is a 20% into socialism or communism, you know, you're going to have to increase that number probably by about 80-90%, right? I mean, like, people seldom show all their cards to you, right? The ones that do don't end up in politics. So is Omar. I see her as a hater. I see her as someone who hates Jews. It's that simple. She hates Jews. She's made lots and lots and lots of comments. This last one about Israel, to me, is different. To me, but I know why she's making the comment. And people slammed her for it. Not enough Democrats slammed her for it. A lot of Democrats came out on her side, even against Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi came out and wanted her, you know, have her apologize. They forced her to apologize. So it wasn't like some natural apology. And then I love all the excuses that people make. You know, I never make excuses for anybody, me personally. I don't want the responsibility. You know, and that's really what it is. You start defending people and making excuses for them. You take on the responsibility of the crap that they're doing. So all over the world, we have anti-Semitism. You know, it's rising in places like Germany again, right? It's rising here in the United States. It's everywhere. In Paris, a lot of anti-Semitism. There's a lot of people that don't like Jewish people. It's that simple. And they all have their reasons, and they have multiple reasons, you know? And I'm not here to get into any of those reasons. I want to talk about, basically, if you say something negative about Israel, you're automatically considered anti-Jew, which is not true. There's a lot of Jews in Israel that don't agree with what the government does there and how they treat people, right? And I also know that they're our close ally. We give them billions of dollars. We basically, you know, pay them to exist. Israel doesn't produce very much. They don't make very much. It's a very expensive place to live. It's a very hard place for people to live. And then you have a lot of Jewish people from the U.S., New York, New Jersey especially, moving to Israel because that's their dream, to go back to the land of milk and honey and the homeland or whatever the hell you want to call it. And then they need housing, so they steal land from people. They don't buy it. They steal it. Back in the day, they used to buy it. You know, in fact, Jewish people and Arabs in that region had a very close relationship for a long time. And then back in the day when the Arab numbers were dying out and they weren't doing so well, the Jewish people came along and then they showed them how to use the soil. They showed them how what they can cultivate, what they can grow so they can live, right? It was a working harmony. And then the land that the Jews have, they bought from them. So it was a mutual co-evolution going on between the groups, right? That stopped. It stopped when the head of the Palestinians went and learned all about communism and then came back. He went to Russia, got into all this communism after just a couple of weeks, came back and then preached it to his people and then, you know, said that the Jews were taking this from them and stealing their wealth and how dare they and whatever. So since then, it's been a war between the two groups, right? Palestinians and Israelis. So it's just so much to it and so much going on. So, but people have their opinions. If you're a representative of the United States, if you're a citizen of the United States, whatever, you don't have to love Israel. There's nothing written that says you have to love the place. And you can certainly, you know, as per our Constitution, you can certainly have your own feelings and celebrate your free speech. Not like in Russia. You know, yesterday they made a law in Russia that if you insult the government in any way, they can haul you in, they can give you fines, they can put you in jail for 15 days, for starters. So can you imagine, like, you know, all these people are talking trash about Trump. Trump draws a lot of it in on himself, man. He makes himself the biggest target in the world. I think that's part of his shtick. You know, I watched him talk, you know, to CPAC last week. And, yeah, 2.5 hours, he went on and on. He actually is comfortable in that room, you know, with all those people and talking to them. So it's just very interesting how there's a lot of people that hate him. They were made to hate him, some brainwashed to hate him. Some just don't like what kind of person he is. Some think he's up to all kinds of stuff. Whatever. But can you imagine a world crafted by Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping? And these are the other world leaders? Or look at Europe. Look what disarray Europe is in. All of it. Disarray. They don't have a clue, man. And now they're trying to come up with some kind of solution and answer to these ongoing problems. Problems with their immigration and their migrants and the whole bit, but mainly problems in their political system, especially in England. And Theresa May, they're trying to get her out of there. You know, the whole Brexit deal, It doesn't look very good. So it's just a lot. You know what it is? It's political stagnancy. And no matter how you fight against them, if you don't have their respect, these leaders, if they don't respect you, they're not going to represent you properly. They're not going to understand how, when they make rules and laws that affects everybody, you know, they're going to play to whatever special interest group supports them and or their base party, and not all of the people. But when you're elected, you represent all the people, including this Omar. She represents all the people in her district. Some of them are going to be Jews. Not all of them are Muslims, right? But I think that she's a poor example of, you know, if you're putting forth this Muslim woman image of somebody who suffered and whatever. And let me tell you, I had a terrible childhood. I think I'm lucky to be alive. And there's lots of times where I couldn't have been, and it was rough. So I'm not saying I suffered like somebody in Somalia, but I don't know how she suffered, and she didn't know how I suffered. And there's a lot of people out there that suffer all kinds of stuff, suffering right now. So she says that because of that, that's why she can spew her hate about Jews, and it makes it okay. And other people are making excuses for her. The second that you validate somebody's hate because of their own personal experiences is the second that you pull out the plug on the tub and let the water out when it comes to decency, when it comes to honor and courage and humility and all the things that go along with the golden rule. You are submitting yourself to hate. You're submitting yourself to that anger. You're submitting yourself to something that is going to take you on the path of internal destruction. It'll destroy you spiritually. It'll destroy you mentally. It'll destroy your life. I know people that sit there and fight all freaking day long on Facebook or whatever the crap social media, they're sitting there screaming at people. People don't even know. They get all stressed out. People, they don't even know, you know, and they're like telling them their business. Like, why do you care? You know, back in the day when you were pissed, you either got in your car and screamed at yourself. Now you see these guys broadcasting in their car. I think it's a hoot. You know, there's one hillbilly out there with a dog, and I see them floating around on Facebook. Like, you know, you have to watch this guy. And a dude driving around with a dog in his car is not going to tell me anything. I don't know. I don't think. But I kind of feel like they do that because they're not allowed to talk around their women or something, you know, and they have to take, you know, they're like, honey, I'm taking the dog for a walk. And they jump in their car. They start broadcasting. They start broadcasting their conservatism. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to say anything. They can't talk at work and they can't talk anywhere. I mean, people look at you, right? It's a very judgmental society. And some people are masters of having a neutral conversation. I can carry on a neutral conversation. And when people start getting heated, I can walk off into a different direction, you know. And I'll tell you, I am true middle of the road because I can see points on both sides. You know, I could also try to understand people when they say something on both sides, you know. But my problem is the both sides, that they're made not to work together. The very essence of these parties is a division, you know. That's a huge problem in a world where you're electing people to represent you properly and make those decisions that impact your life, your family's life, your town, your city, your state, wherever the hell you are, it impacts you. These decisions they make could have short or long-term implications. So you need people who are not ignorant, who are not hell-bent on hate, that they're there to prove that they hate this and hate that. I heard Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez claim that she was the voice of the Democratic Party. Now, Fox says she's the voice of the Democratic Party as a joke. And then here's this woman saying that she really is, and Pelosi's like, nah. So we're seeing a little civil war go on in the Democratic Party right now. And then what I think is interesting is that, you know, Cortez and then her campaign manager, or whatever you want to call him, his advisor, her advisor now, took $1 million and moved it from her campaign and put it in private LLCs. And once that money is in those private LLCs, they can do whatever they want to do with it. $1 million. this Miss Socialism, and she's out there for the people. And, you know, there's another article out there that she's taking, that there's the train stations right across from her office, but yet they're taking all these private cars, private Ubers and all that running around, and they have the price tag for that, you know, of all this, instead of people getting on a train, was what she preached. This is the stuff that she preached, right? Trains, no planes, no cars. And, you know, she was out there eating burgers, and, you know, cow farts are bad and don't eat burgers. She's preaching to people on what they should and shouldn't do. And that's not the job of a representative. A representative represents you and the things that you need, not the things that you should and should be doing, you know, because you work and you pay taxes, and that's what you should be doing. And then these politicians take these tax money and use it for the betterment of mankind, right? The people here in the United States of America are people that we help abroad. We generate a lot of money in the United States, a lot. In fact, all of it for the world. You know, we're the ones who give. We're the ones who support other countries. We support everybody, even the countries that hate us. We support them. So, but I'm looking around, and I got people on both sides in my world. I know people who are extreme liberals. You can barely even talk to them because they're just rabid mad dogs right now, because they've been trained to hate. Like train a Doberman to bite the crap out of somebody, you know, and then they just see red all the time, and you can't talk to them about anything. They will never say Trump did anything good. Never, 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 never. But me, I like results, and I look for results. I like to understand what I'm dealing with, and I don't listen to people's lip service, you know. So when Trump says the economy is doing really well, you know, I'm seeing numbers that may not reflect that. I'm seeing that people's personal wealth has fallen off again. And then the last time it felt like this was during the Obama years. So I see that illegal immigration, people coming over the border in tens of thousands, these huge numbers, more than under the Obama era, right? In the last few years. I mean, when you start looking at these side-by-side statistics, I'm not ever going to stick up for Barack Obama. But I think that, you know, he in of himself went way beyond losing his way. You know, I think that maybe the guy had a chance in the beginning. I had hoped he did, but really it didn't work out like that. But with Trump, you know, I mean, when you look at all the promises, you know, he's doing the wall, we need the wall, all that stuff. And now he declared a national emergency. I'm looking at a power grid in our country that's old and outdated, that most of these power companies run on software from the early 1980s on a 5.5-inch, 5.25 floppy disk, whatever. You know, floppy disks, early 80s. We have more technology in our smartphone than they do in their entire system. And these grids are old and they're rusted and outdated. The cables, the whole bit, everything. We should be putting these wires underground. We should be thinking about the future and saving money in the future by protecting these lines and by getting these towers out and by even telephone poles and things like that. There's things that could have been done a long time ago, but they didn't have the insight, or they didn't want to spend the money. And it comes down to spending a lot more. You know, one telephone pole is 10 grand here in New York, $10,000. That's what they cost. Just big treated piece of wood, right? But they break all the time. They get hit by cars and trucks. They snap in bad weather, all kinds of things, you know, and the lines are exposed to the air and the wind and whatever. And then they get dated. You put things underground in a conduit. It's easy to get to, no real problem, no issue, keeps it safe, you know. And then also you don't have the eyesore and you don't have the poles sticking out of the ground and that type of thing. But I'm saying that if you don't rebuild the infrastructure, someone's going to have to do it sooner or later. It was one of his campaign promises. Obama, too. Obama's very first thing he was talking about was rebuilding the infrastructure. And I know that's what politicians say all the time. We're going to rebuild the infrastructure. We're going to change the way that government works. We're going to get people back to work. You know, all that crap. But do they? do the statistics reflect the reality of what's going on? I mean, I think that they're fudging the numbers. You know, New York City, when they say that crime is down, they don't finish the sentence. Misdemeanors are down, but violent crime and felonies are up. So crime is not down. The crime that's down that they're talking about is the catch and release they're doing for these low-level crimes. So the police aren't arresting people like they used to, or giving people tickets like they used to, for peeing in the street, defecating in the street. That's happening in New York now, like in San Francisco. You know, there's all kinds of things that are going on. And then strong-arm robberies, things like that. Basically anything short of violence. Theft, going into stores, stealing. So those crimes are up because, one, they're not being counted. And number two, they're being tolerated by the powers that be. You think these criminals don't know that? You think they don't have an idea of what's going on, you know, when they're not getting arrested for the crimes they're committing? So this is the deal. If you allow it, it's going to get worse. So there's a reason why those things are illegal. There's a reason why those laws exist. And there's a reason why you need to enforce those laws, right? But you're just kind of giving the green light to all these thugs. These thugs who commit these crimes are not your friend. They're not the good guy down the street who's misunderstood. When I hear that people say, well, minorities have a problem because they go to jail, you know, and all this other stuff, but they're committing the crimes. When Barack Obama first got elected, and he was giving this speech to a group, and then he said, you know, really with his horrible, nasty attitude, you know, like, let's face it, there's a terrible disproportionate amount of Black and Latino men in prison, you know? Well, there's a disproportionate amount of Black and Latino men committing crimes. So that's the reality of it. But how do you fix it? Do you fix it by arresting people, putting them in jail, and then just incarceration? You know, they spend 95% of their money in corrections, in incarceration, keeping people in, making sure they don't get out. And then maybe 5%, lucky in some places, maybe 10% for rehabilitation. Then they come back out. A lot of them are gangs. They go back to the same crap hole neighborhood. They commit the same crimes. They're around the same type of people. And unless they do something that's really in the face of law enforcement, or they create terrible, you know, victims, and you can put your finger on them, they just keep going out and creating victims and keep going out and creating crime, you know? And then the government looks the other way. So they fail to protect you because they know that the system of letting them out and doing catch and release and all these things is creating more victims. They know this. It's premeditated. They don't care. Because they're feeding the machine. They want it. They're feeding the machine. They're keeping themselves in business, right? Is it harsh to look at it like that? Because I can't think of much else out there of why it would exist. Can't think of it. And then these politicians, what do they spend their time on? A resolution about hate. It means nothing. It's non-binding. It means nothing. Nothing. This woman can go out there and say, I hate Jews, be like Mel Gibson. Go out there, talk about how Jews ruin the world and whatever, keep ranting about Jews. Those, to me, when I hear people say stuff like that, I know that they're ignorant, you know? And I don't have a lot of respect for religion, me personally, but I'm not going to knock the individual if they're not a bad person. If someone's a bad person, then go ahead, put the screws to them. You know, put the screws to them, drag them through the media, massacre them in front of the whole goddamn world, by all means. But if they're innocent, it doesn't matter who they are, white, Black, it doesn't matter if they are Jewish or whatever, man, I don't care. But there's a lot of Jew haters in the world, man, a lot. And then, you know what? I used to live in the city. I lived on Long Island. I was around a lot of different groups of people, very diverse, right? Including haters. I knew people who were Black that hate my friend Gottfried, Black guy from Jamaica, lived in Queens. You know, he'd rant about Jews. I'm like, Gottfried, why do you hate the Jews so much? She's like, they're filthy animals, filthy, evil, beast animals. I'm like, but yeah. Why do you hate them? You know why? Because all of the apartments, this is actually a very simple answer. These guys lived with landlords who were all Jewish on their block. And then they ran slums. You were all slums. They're all paying good money. Even if they're getting welfare, they're still getting paid. These were all slums. So people get these notions of, you know, what one group of people are just because if one guy or two guys are Jewish or whatever, you know, a block, one Jewish guy owns the whole block and he's a slumlord. That's a big problem. It's been a problem in the city forever. You know, judges in the city have sentenced these guys to live in their own buildings and things like that, and or put them in jail for a long time. So it's easy to hate. You know that? It's harder to love. It's harder to have that understanding. It's easy to be ignorant, block yourself out, just freaking hate everything. But to understand about, okay, I have friends who are Jewish, I have friends who are Muslim, I have friends who are whatever color, and all of these people, I'm not friends with any dummies. All these people would take their shirt off their back, bend over backwards to help you, and have lots of love in their heart, and they help others in their community. Doesn't matter what color they are, doesn't matter what religion they are. Those are real people. So you can't say, you know, I mean, the word racism is really tossed around a lot. Trump is a racist. I've heard Cortez say that. I've heard this Omar say that. Trump is a racist. They made a declaration that Trump is a racist, but I don't see the evidence of that. And I'd be the first person to say it. I'm happy to say it if he is, you know? I don't owe that guy anything. I'm happy to say it. I don't love Trump. If you listen to the show, you know I don't love this dude. And more as time goes on, I think that he's becoming more and more ineffective. You know, I think he's been, because of this resist stuff, ultimately ineffective from the beginning. That this party has really, you know, paved the path of destruction. And they don't care who gets hurt. They don't care. All they see is they want Trump out of there. They see red. Now they're going to impeach him. They have all these other committees looking for obstruction of justice. Whatever, man. If he's guilty of something, show me the evidence. I'm happy to look at it, happy to talk about it. I'm not Sean Hannity. I'm not one of these guys who are just going to sit there and lick Trump's asshole every fucking second of the day. I'm someone who's going to look at this and say, this is wrong. What he's doing is wrong, all that ever, right? If he's right, he's right. He's wrong, he's wrong. Do I think he's a racist? No. Because I know for a fact that this dude had gotten awards with people like Rosa Parks and, you know, all kinds of black leaders who used to really like him and get in there. You think Trump was just being friends with them to look good? Maybe. Maybe. You could throw a maybe out there. Wants to keep that image, right? But how about this? When Jesse Jackson, who is black, or black, if you want to call him a leader, you can. I wouldn't. But, you know, he had a group of people who were working for black rights and that type of stuff, civil rights stuff, right? Part of the civil rights movement. He did march in the civil rights movement, so you can give him that. Jesse Jackson, back in the day, I think the early 80s, went to Trump and said, you know, you own offices on Wall Street. We black people want a voice on Wall Street. Trump gave them an office to use. He gave them money. He donated money to their cause. He attended their meetings to see what the deal is, see if he could help. That sounds like a racist to you? That's someone that hates black people? Because I've met people that hate black people. They don't do anything nice for them. Nothing. Hillary Clinton. If you want Hillary Clinton, her idols, one guy, Robert Byrd. Byrd is a KKK member. Was. He's the Grand Kriegel of the Ku Klux Klan from West Virginia. That's the guy she looks up to. That's her mentor. The freaking Ku Klux Klan. And they're going after Trump as a hater. And Hillary comes out. I like this. She said that she's not running in 2020. And then that she's not going anywhere. And I agree on both those statements. Actually, I totally agree. She's not doing 2020 and she ain't going anywhere. You know what? She is the kind of person to, if there's a foot race and that race is half over and she thought she could win, she's the type of person that would run right in there and try to win, right? And right now you have a bunch of losers in that field. The Democratic field for president, there's just a bunch of people that are a whole lot of nothing. And you got Bernie Sanders, this dude. I like how he made his announcement in Brooklyn that he was running. Like anybody in Brooklyn cared that Bernie Sanders was running. He's not even a politician from New York. He started off in Brooklyn. This is what gets me about people like this. He says that he looking forward to representing all people, urban areas, all that. Now, that was his aim from the very beginning. So is that why he left Brooklyn, a highly diverse place, and ran to Vermont, which is 99.9% white? Vermont is whiter than ivory soap. You understand that? And Bernie ran up there to be in politics. He ran up there. So whatever, man. This is the deal. You can't trust him because he's been politically inconsistent all of his life. This is the guy that has gave aid and comfort to the enemy when he tried to tell Castro how to overthrow the American government. I remember that. And then he spent a lot of time down in Ecuador, you know, causing trouble for people and taking the side of socialists and or communists. This is somebody you can't run the country. Besides, he's unbelievably old. You know what I mean? Unbelievably old. By the time the election rolls around, he's going to be 79, pushing 80. That's just for that type of job, for that length of time, he's got to be in there. It's just not plausible. And then you get Joe Biden. Joe Biden, who goes to rehab a couple times a year for his drinking problems. And Joe Biden, people know him as creepy Uncle Joe, that he's like touching all these young girls. There are thousands of photographs out there of this dude, you know, in public, just grabbing these girls, smooching them, sticking his face in their neck and kissing their neck. They don't even know these girls. He's like grabbing a hold of them, like, you know, putting his hands where they don't belong. I'll tell you, man. That's the last thing you want for your kid. Creepy Uncle Joe. Creepy Uncle Joe on the campaign trail, Mr. Touchy Feely. You know who was like that? It was George Bush Sr. They said that a woman couldn't even stand next to him without getting groped, him sticking his hand between her ass. Oh, no, that's fine. Don't do anything about it. You know, because these guys can't keep their hands to themselves. It's fine. It's not fine. And people need to take a stand against that type of thing, you know, no matter what the hell their political affiliation is, you know. Look at this Michael Jackson thing. So Jackson, more accusers come out all these years later. This guy is dead, long dead, right? HBO documentary comes out. The family tried fighting it. They didn't want it to come out. It came out. And now people have grown a goddamn conscience saying, hey, we're not going to play his music anymore. I like how the headline was like, you know, the radio stations around the world pull Michael Jackson's music in Canada and New Zealand. it made it like going around the world, you know? No more Thriller, around the world. And I grew up with Michael Jackson in the sense of, you know, he was on TV. I didn't grow up with him. I know of his antics and, you know, the Jackson 5. It was a comic, you know, a comic strip, like, you know, a cartoon. Now they call them animations. You can't say cartoon in front of a kid these days. They're like, you mean animation, stupid? You know, like, you know, yeah, cartoon. Fucking cartoon. You mean animation? There's a generation thing going on there. But Michael Jackson, man, the guy was a pop star, huge, big deal, right? Pepsi generation, not my cola. Pepsi is not my cola. I do seek out Coca-Cola in the bottle from Mexico, legally. Comes from Mexico legally. I like that. Pepsi, no. But anyway, that's Michael Jackson, right? Big, big, giant deal. So now, the guy had all kinds of problems, man. All kinds of sickness going on in his life. I think the guy was severely mentally ill and nobody did anything about it. I think the people around him used him, you know, as just a prop to make money off of. You look at people like Barry Gordy from Motown, who's a big crook criminal. It's Barry Gordy who ripped off all those black musicians. You know, they keep talking about how everybody else is evil, white people, evil Jewish people. Barry Gordy, black dude, ran Motown and robbed those people blind. He robbed all those musicians. There was only a couple that he gave any respect to, people like Donna Summer and Michael Jackson. But Michael Jackson, you know, this guy, obviously, look at his face. Look what he did to himself. You know, the bleaching his skin to get lighter and whiter, the nose that he did, and his nose kept falling off. I'll tell you, man, it was a damn shame that the people around him did not help that man. They didn't help him. They, you know, sure, he had doctors. Doctors gave him lots of meds. That's how he died. He took all these meds. You know, a lot of people think they committed suicide. You know, they don't even want to say it. But this dude never grew up. This dude was never a man. He stayed a kid forever. And he didn't even, you know, had no childhood. His whole childhood was doing shows. His father, who was like a tyrant, ran them around. He's a very abusive, nasty person, ran these guys around, and he only cared about the bottom line, which was that getting them shows, making the money, and whatever. One time Michael Jackson was being interviewed. I'll never forget this, man. He's in the back of a limo. And this is like before he totally morphed, because he was a good-looking guy. You know, before he did all that plastic surgery to himself and the whole thing, he was handsome. There's no problem with him. So he's in the back of this limo. This guy is interviewing him. They're going past a park, right? And there's kids out there playing baseball. And he's like, he opens the window a little bit. He's like looking at these guys, and he's like, oh, look at the kids playing baseball. Oh, look at them. And then the guy's like, Mike, did you ever get a chance to play baseball with kids like that? He's like, no, I've always been on the road, and I never really had a chance to do any of that. And then he like looks forward, and then in a civil moment, he's like, starts singing, baseball, baseball. If I was that dude, I might have jumped out of there. He seemed like he was ready to go Fruit Loops all over the place. And that was omnipresent. That illness was present. So this dude equated himself as a kid, hung out with kids, maybe did sexual stuff with them. You know, I don't know. I know that the kids that he was in bed with, yeah, he would get into bed naked with a whole bunch of kids, sometimes seven or eight of them at one time. And when I was listening to this stuff back in the day, when I was growing up, I was a teenager and hearing this stuff, you get a little older and you hear more of this stuff. And you're like, how could this be? How could a dude like that be in bed with all these little kids and then their parents letting them? So it turns out that he gave the parents lots of money. He flew them around his private plane. He gave them these lavish trips, you know, hit them off with all kinds of stuff, gifts, all kinds of stuff. He bought their kids from them. He rented them, right? Had that Neverland. It was an amusement park and had all the animals there. It was like a dreamland for young kids. And if this dude had been the kind of guy that was like, hey, man, you know, I just want to have a decent life and, you know, invite kids, maybe sick kids or underprivileged, give them something, some kind of good experience. But going to his place, getting into bed with him, and he's whipping out wine and pills, that's not the experience those kids were looking for. And their parents were just as guilty as Michael Jackson was if they even thought for a second that there was anything improper going on. And how could there not be? Here was a guy at the time, his early 40s, getting naked with a bunch of little kids who were 7 and 8 years old and being in bed with them. That should have been put to bed right away. They should have put a stop. The people around Michael Jackson should have put a stop to that crap right away. Well, no matter what they were thinking, but they were either afraid of him, or they were sycophants, or they were the people who were using him to make a buck, right? They just wanted to keep it going, keep the machine going, to make as much as you can out of it. And then there he is. He's dead to ground. He can't defend himself. Here's these, documentaries and all that. And now people pulling his music. I just don't know how you can pull that kind of thing. You know, I don't know how you pull back, because his music is still very popular around the world. And I think people are going to listen no matter what. I still see Bill Cosby shows out there. This guy date raped dozens of women, over 60 women. Over 60 women he raped. He's a serial rapist. And then it's like hard in your mind to separate this dude. Here's Bill Cosby, a dude you grew up with in the media. He was America's dad for a minute there on the Cosby Show, putting on, like, you know, what life could be, right? In a situation like that, all of a sudden, it ain't about laughing or joking anymore. It's not about putting pops and all that stuff, Jell-O pudding or Coke. You know what it's about? It's about crime. And it's very hard to think that your heroes, and I'm not going to say Bill Cosby was a hero, you know, but it's very difficult to think about, well, he was to some people, right? Same for Michael Jackson. But it's very difficult to think that these people are such bad people. And then that's the reality of life, you know? That's the reality of it. And it exists on every level, you know? Very sad. So I feel for anybody, you know, including these victims in the Catholic Church. I see how another cardinal was just found guilty in France on hiding all this child molestation stuff. You know, the fact that priests rape these kids. The truth is coming out. And I think that with the internet, with so much information out there, and people are not afraid to come out anymore. They're not afraid to go out there and vent, and they should, because they have to heal, right? I mean, they've had these young people that got molested had something taken from them that you can't get back. It's just something you have to live with and realize the people that did it are horrible, evil people, and you got to put a stop to them. You need to lock them up. Put a stop to them, you know. So as the world turns, man, I think that we're in a delicate situation around the world, and we need real leadership. Someone's going to come forward and not do it because they want to, you know, make it like a TV show like Trump did. Man, Trump is all about the entertainment, it feels like. But really, I think that people need to come forward and represent, you know, and represent, and don't let social media, you know, these people on social media, the Zuckerberg and all that, do you think that they care about you at all? Do you think they care if you're stressed out? Do you think they care that you're fighting with your friends and neighbors and family over stuff that means nothing in the real world, you know? And then it's just, you're throwing up a goddamn wall for everything, you know? So people are being used and manipulated. And to make money. They're making money off of your pain and your suffering. Sounds like freaking religion, does it? Making you money off of pain and suffering. Speaking of making money off of pain and suffering, England wins this week. This week's contest, the award. England wins. So starting April 1st, and it's not an April Fool's joke. Starting April 1st, the UK, the United Kingdom, the government, is going to have porno blocker, a free porn block. So if you're in England and then you tune in on April 1st and see your free porno, you're not going to be able to. So to see that free porn, you have to register and get an ID card and then have a sign-in number and a serial number so you can put all that down so the government can track what you're watching. And what you're doing. A legal thing, but it's not illegal, you know. Porno is not illegal in England or the US. You know what I mean? Maybe some forms of it, but basic porn, not illegal. Or to be anonymous, you can pay the government £5. Give them £5, and then they'll give you a pass to watch that porn, right? But the alternative is either be known and they track you or whatever. Well, they don't know. They don't, you know what? It's not even that you can sign up for a service because they still want to know what you're doing. So basically, they're building files on people, and this is kind of a PC thing. They want to abolish porn. They've been trying to do it for years. There's plenty of groups out there pushing. You know, and you know what? With porno, I'm kind of on the fence. You know, if the participants, of course, are willing, I don't see too much of a problem with it. You know, I think that the overall. I mean, of course, I watch porn. I'll watch porn here and there, you know. I think once I got the internet back in the day, I went to a porn overload and I didn't care much anymore. You know how, like, if you ever, like, you love donuts and you get a job at a donut shop and you eat every donut in the place and you don't want them anymore. I think there's that. But for a government to cash in on it is wrong. This is wrong on many levels. If you tried this stuff here in the U.S., there would be a revolution. People can be pissed about all kinds of things. In the U.S., take an issue, march, all that, but you ban porn? Oh, my God. And so forth. That's the only reason why the internet was created. Faster porno, faster download speeds. You know, it's like the number one industry. So, but it's just goes to show you that there's no free speech there, number one. You can't badmouth the queen. She'll lock you up. I saw how Prince Harry and his little princess, his Hollywood princess, had the whole thing about how they're going to have a baby and it's going to be gender fluid and they're not going to say male or female and they're going to keep the room different shades of gray. They tried that. And one of my friends on Facebook was like, the queen's going to shut that shit down. And then all of a sudden, not even 24 hours later, here comes a communique from the palace. Like, that's not, it's fake news. It's not true. It's not happening. Gender fluid, nothing. Don't worry about it. You know, signed the queen. So, yeah, the queen's still in control. So no matter how much the Hollywood princess thinks she has a little cuck, the queen still rules in England. So I don't know about the porn block, man, but I think that's just taking people's rights away. You know, I mean, it's something that's not illegal and to track people like that. There's enough privacy lost as it is. So, yeah, with that, I will end the show. This is Michael Angley live on United Public Radio Network, on UPRN, talkradio.com, 107.5 New Orleans for all you people celebrated Mardi Gras the other day and had a good time and you're still recovering. I'm glad you're still with us, man. And 104.7 and Pastor Christian. I'll see you guys next week on this year's show. Bye.